He asked about his mother when he'd been 15, brave with hormones. Father had glanced at him, then back to his grimoire. A witch, pledged to me. German or Polish or something like that. Is that why she gave me my name? Because she was pledged to you? It was such a stupid name. People always got it wrong, and he'd given up explaining, even though he always wanted to tell them the difference between God has heard and poison of God. Maybe if she did it to show her faithful service. Sammy, Father had chuckled, she didn't give you anything. It was a scissors stab, but he'd persisted. Where is she now? Father had closed the book with a sigh. Everywhere. Sam had stood rooted, uncomprehending. The birth was difficult, the way God intended. It left her vulnerable. That night, Sam had crumpled up the picture and hidden it in the back of his closet. Sometime during the next few years, it had disappeared. But he still remembered her eyes, the first woman he'd killed. Winchester invited Sam to his room the next night, which was promising, but when Sam showed up, the bed had been tilted up against the wall, propped up on its headboard, and the mattress was sitting on the carpet. At least the disarrangement drew some focus off of the hot air balloon decor, although there was nothing to be done about the big yellow lamps with their switches embedded in the gondolas. Sam raised his eyebrows, silently asking for an explanation. Thought it'd be a good idea if you'd know how to fall. He was totally serious, too. Sam spent several hours falling down, falling over, falling back, even falling forward. When he protested about 40 minutes in and got up to leave, Winchester nodded to himself, then swept his leg out so fast Sam barely saw it, and Sam got to experience what falling was like on the bare carpet. By the end, Sam was sore and his ass hurt, and he hadn't even gotten Winchester to press their bodies fully together, which might have been some consolation. But the next day, Winchester started showing him how to break holds. When Sam had been 10 years old, Father had instituted a ritual, the end-of-the-day deficiency list. Everybody gathered together, and Father would identify one or two screw-ups by each of them. Unless there had been none he'd cared to name, which naturally made that person a target for the next few days. Sam had stayed clear of Father's more in sorrow than in anger, chidings, about 1 day out of 4, which was better than anyone else's records. Father didn't have a fixed order for listing the names, so there's no way to tell if you'd escaped until the very end. Sam would always think, before the start, that the waiting was the worst part. But Father had a way of making your errors sound so amazingly stupid that waiting was generally preferable. Winchester never made him feel like an idiot or a weakling, even at the beginning when Sam got winded after 10 minutes, while Winchester was still running backwards in front of him, grinning like a class clown. He even warned Sam about how to keep his muscles from seizing up. His rebukes were softer than Father's caresses. Winchester would whack Sam open-palmed on the ass of the shoulder when he got through Sam's guard, or smirk at Sam over dinner when they discussed how he'd killed the hell out of the tree next to the target. Without penalties, Sam hadn't even noticed he was being taught at first. He had just assumed it was Winchester's way of passing the time. Sam started to spend his evenings researching suspicious, unsolved fire deaths. There were a lot of them, too many, so that any patterns were lost in white noise. Then, on a hunch, he restricted it to deaths involving mothers and their children. There were still hundreds in the early 80s alone. He generated a spreadsheet with dozens of biographical details for each victim. One night, frustrated, he tried a graphical representation of the data, and one of the scatter plots wasn't all that scattered. From 1981 through 1987, there had been an enormous spike in the number of babies who died at exactly 6 months old, burned up with their mothers. Or at least, that was what the police records said. Sam's random lie hadn't been so random as all that. Father had said that the birth had left his mother vulnerable. He hadn't said to what. Most of the babies couldn't have made it, one way or another. Even if he went back to his earliest memories, there had only been about 40 of them growing up together. The only attrition he remembered from his childhood had been Father's dispatch of Charles. At 8, Charles had proved unable to control his impulses with respect to the household pets. Father had opted for a swift and public punishment. Large quantities of blood still forced Sam to fight the urge to gag, not in themselves, but because of the sense memory of being required to kneel in his own vomit for over an hour before he'd been allowed to clean it up. The point was, Father had collected his children from around the country, and probably the world. Sam was still working on foreign data, especially Germany and Poland, but most other countries' records were even harder to get than American ones. But the initial fires seemed to have been some sort of 6-month screening. Sam wondered what sort of powers a 6-month-old could demonstrate. Or was it just that Father had liked the looks of the ones he had saved? Winchester's brother had likely been a failed recruit. Maybe Winchester himself. But no, there'd been no sign of powers, and Winchester was well past the age of manifestation. "Thank you, ma'am," Winchester said, smoothing his hand over his tie. Missy Fox didn't look any happier to be called ma'am at the end of the interview than she had at the beginning, but at least she'd bought Winchester's humorless cop act, and she nodded and ushered them out of her condo. Officiousness was really Winchester's best mode, not the hail fellow well met thing he'd tried with witnesses when he'd first met Sam. He got too nervous to be believable when he tried to smile at everyone. But with Sam around to do the smiling, Winchester was free to be the bad cop, or, often enough, the bored and indifferent insurance investigator. The only time Sam had seen him relax around a stranger immediately had been a case involving a garage, and what they had initially thought might have been a possessed car. Sam had known it was going to be annoying from the get-go. Winchester had glowed when he mentioned the possibility of an actual Christine, and spent half the journey on an extended analysis of the merits and demerits of various Stephen King movies. Then, when they arrived to investigate, the garage owner had creamed himself at the sight of the Impala. It had taken Winchester 2.5 hours to get around to the point of their visit, by which time Sam had already found out, by talking to the owner's girlfriend, that the likely source of the problem was not a car, but an extremely dissatisfied customer who had decided to start a beyond-the-grave chapter of the Better Business Bureau. It had taken extensive efforts on Sam's part to keep his patience and cajole Winchester into leaving the garage for the cemetery. Once they'd burned the bones, though, Winchester had been effusive in his praise, and for some reason, that had just pissed Sam off more. He wanted to tell Winchester that he didn't give a good goddamn whether some moron's garage burned down. He wanted to tell Winchester to stop pretending that Sam was some kind of good guy. Which was stupid, he knew. Winchester was wrong, but he wasn't pretending. It was just difficult for Sam to keep all the anger in the right places. In the end, they'd left with a freshly detailed car and 5 phone numbers for garages across the country that the owner swore would treat the Impala as she deserved to be treated. Sam thought that anyone who called a car a she deserved to be treated rather badly himself, but no one had asked him. Once he'd had a chance to contemplate his peak, Sam understood a little bit better. Winchester rarely got the opportunity to share his enthusiasms. The problem with ghost hunting was obvious. People who loved weapons as much as Winchester did generally either didn't trust strangers enough to talk to them, or wanted to recruit them into neo-Nazi cults. B-movie fans all congregated on the internet now, and Winchester hated to type. Of course, he'd feel comfortable with someone who recognized the glory of his vehicle. Sam didn't actually care, but he resolved to do a better job of listening. It was very important that Winchester turned to him first, after all. The night manager promised them that their rooms were right across from one another. "You have the Aries," he told Winchester, "and you have the Virgo." Sam shuddered to think what those names symbolized. "So how do you afford this life of luxury anyway?" Winchester asked when they were heading down the dingy corridor toward their destinations. Sam shrugged. "Money saved up from college. My dad. It's running out, though."
"We could share," Winchester suggested. "Really?" It was okay to sound eager, he thought. Sam Marshall was an innocent looking for a guide through this strange new underworld. Winchester looked at him and smiled a little. "Yeah, really. I don't exactly have a big travel budget myself. You play any games? Pool? Poker?" Sam let himself look shocked. That's how you get money?
Sometimes, Winchester said. My dad... And then he shut down like a garage door slamming into concrete, the way he did every time the subject of paternal influences came up. Anyway, you come over tonight. I'll show you some tricks. Sam let himself fall a few paces behind so that he could control his expression. The man was a walking encyclopedia of hunter's lore, and the weapon he couldn't work hadn't been invented, but Sam was pretty sure he had no fucking clue. The kinds of bad checks he was writing to Sam's libido, with his sudden grins and his casual asides. With the pistols, Winchester made him fire a couple of times, so you don't freak out when you hear how it really sounds. And then they both put in earplugs. This, of course, necessitated that any corrections to Sam's stance be made hands-on. Winchester wrapped his arms around Sam, moving him into place, sliding his hands down Sam's right arm to make sure it was braced properly, his chest pressed up against Sam's back. He had to be on tiptoe to do it, Sam was sure, hooking his chin over Sam's shoulder so that he could see where Sam was aiming. It was substantially more distracting than any attack Sam had yet experienced. He did notice that Winchester was careful to keep his groin from settling against Sam's ass, which he chose to interpret as evidence that Winchester was no more immune to Sam's charms than the reverse. Even after weeks of practice, Winchester's hands always stayed on Sam's arms a few seconds too long when he was correcting Sam's stance. But he always let go, and he didn't cut Sam any slack even when Sam got bored and pulled his saddest eyes, trying to persuade him to cut the training short. The whole thing was... It was just weird, being touched all the time, with nothing behind it. Or, anyway, nothing but the intent to show some move or another. Everything was a test. Sam had known that since before he'd known his name. But Winchester didn't seem to see it that way. Sure, he got competitive when Sam started hitting the targets with just about equal accuracy. But he seemed happiest when the contest was closest. And after the sparring match in which Sam had finally put him on his back and kept him there with a knee in his stomach, he stopped cursing after 30 seconds and then smiled like he'd just been served a huge steak dinner. Sam pulled back and stood. There was a ball of barbed wire twisting inside his chest, squeezing the breath out of his lungs. Winchester jumped easily back to his feet, clapping his hands together. "Okay, then. Now we run." Sam watched him retreat for a few seconds, then launched himself after. Domestically, things were also proceeding, in fits and starts. Winchester dressed in the bathroom, but he always watched when Sam came out of the shower with his towel knotted too low. He tried not to tease Winchester too much, because he'd hate to get kicked out. Also, Winchester slept in boxer briefs and tight t-shirts, so he still got plenty of eye candy, especially since Winchester tended to push the covers off of his bed while he was asleep. It wasn't all ogling and beer. Winchester was used to living with someone, but it was someone else. "Hey, actually, I like my coffee straight," Sam told him, the fourth time he showed up with a cup that was already holding a year's worth of Florida's sugar output. Winchester blinked at him a couple of times, then gave him a stoic, suffering face, which was unfairly good-looking on him. "Sorry," he said, and held out the other cup. "This one's clean." Sam took it, because refusing wasn't going to make Winchester feel any better. The strange feeling in his stomach was just annoyance at himself that he hadn't spoken up earlier. But the other side of Winchester's home training was that, when Winchester pulled up at the laundromat, he took Sam's bag as if it was obvious that they'd washed their clothes together. Sam wasn't carrying anything that would disprove his story about being a college student jerked unwillingly into the underbelly of American Monster Society, so he didn't resist. It was kind of relaxing to sit with Winchester in the night-emptied space, the only soundtrack the slosh of their sudsy clothes, and listen to his stories about growing up on the road. Never about his father, of course, just about the towns and the schools and the jobs. But dear old Dad was there in the negative space, and Sam was getting a pretty good picture. Obsessed with hunting, relying on Winchester to do the mundane tasks like cooking and washing the clothes, pulling him out of school on a moment's notice when a hunt beckoned. Winchester was proud of the fact that he'd gone on hunts with his father since before he was old enough to read.
He could conjugate Latin like a Roman, and make a shaped charge out of 2 pipe cleaners and the contents of a housekeeping cart. But he told Sam once that he hadn't found the time, meaning his father hadn't found the time, to get his GED. Even father had done better than that, though admittedly father's aims had been somewhat different. Sam's classics courses had been useful, and scattering everyone to colleges around the country for a few years had given them all some breathing space before the competition began. Sometimes Sam wondered what would have happened if he hadn't jumped the gun and tracked Max and Andy down to their respective campuses. But given what Jake had done right after, he figured that it would have been much the same in the end. He learned well enough how to move through the human world, which was what was important. Winchester had never been given that much freedom of movement. It was no wonder he didn't know how to deal with people he wasn't questioning for purposes of a hunt. After losing his wife and baby son, Winchester's father had kept a stranglehold on his remaining family. Winchester had started to look better rested as soon as they started sharing a room. Sam guessed that he hadn't spent a night apart from his father until the man disappeared. That also explained why he treated Winchester Sr.'s journal like a talisman. Sam suspected that he would have slept with it under his pillow if that wouldn't have interfered with keeping a gun in the same place. Which raised the question of the motivation for his father's disappearance. Hypothesis. Father had something to do with it, because there was no way Sam could have gained Winchester's trust with a control freak of that magnitude hovering around.
Why? That was the question. After a while, Winchester actually started telling him when he was doing well on the exercises. At first, he was hesitant, like he wasn't sure he had any right to speak up, but it became just another part of the routine. Every time Sam hit his latest goal, Winchester would make the next day's training that much harder, adding civilian targets to avoid or closing the book of protective runes and making Sam draw them from memory, and then demanding 10 more push-ups. The fall that Sam had turned 13, Father had pulled him aside. "Samael," he'd said, all seriousness, "you're my favorite. It's important that you know that, and it's important that you keep this a secret just between you and me." Sam had been brimful of happiness, able to ignore almost all of the other kids' attacks, for nearly a week before he'd spilled it to Ava after she got in a particularly good dig. She'd laughed and laughed. "You are truly brain damaged," she'd chortled, her palms slapping the wall she'd fallen back against. "Didn't you figure out he says that to all of us?" At first it was hard not to flinch when Winchester said, "Awesome," in that tone of unequivocal approval, but Sam learned to accept it. Okay, maybe he also started swaggering when Winchester praised him, but that was justified. And then, after a good day, Winchester started calling Sam, Sammy. Sam just gritted his teeth and replied, "Sam," in his best "fuck you" tone, which as far as he could tell only made Winchester grin. "Just once, come on," Sam wheedled, as they drove toward the cemetery. He was pushing, he knew, but Winchester hadn't seemed to mind so far. "Dude," Winchester said, trying for offended and not quite getting there. "I am not going to say just the facts, ma'am, so you can stop asking any time now." "Mrs. Gordon was trying to give me a chocolate chip cookie recipe. And where were you? Off laughing, that's where." Winchester hadn't been laughing, but he'd been fighting off a smile when Mrs. Gordon took Sam's friendly, sensitive detective act as an invitation to share every secret of her kitchen. She'd answered Winchester's bored-sounding questions with ill grace, but Sam's fluffy bangs and goofy rounded shoulders had turned her expansive, and, once the digressions were conquered, reasonably helpful about the troubles that had been plaguing her husband at work before he died. Yes, Sam's kidneys were floating from the gallon of over-sweetened iced tea she'd served him, and he wanted an hour of his life back. Overall, though, he'd have to call the day's work a positive. He frowned to himself. Of course, he didn't care about the poltergeist that was threatening to drive a struggling bank out of business, but Winchester had been impressed. That was the success. That night, after they returned to the motel from the job, They popped a couple of beers and relaxed on the curb next to the car.
"It's good," Winchester said, raising his bottle to his mouth and draining all but a mouthful.
"Being a team."
Sam thought about wild animals and shifted himself a little, so that his knees were aimed at Winchester even though they weren't touching.
"To teamwork," he said, tilting his bottle so that Winchester just had to close an inch's distance to clink their beers together.
When Winchester did, he raised his head and Sam gave him the full treatment. Personally, Sam wasn't fond of the way a wide smile flattened out his nose, but it made his dimples jump out, and you couldn't really argue with success. Certainly, Winchester seemed to appreciate the view, grinning back goofily, and at some point Sam stopped thinking about smiling and just did it. The airplane crash hunt started badly. When Jerry Panowski said he hadn't ever expected to see Winchester without his father, attached at the hip was part of his narration, Winchester went whiter than the time that the ghost in Reston had managed to stab him through the shoulder. Even Jerry, who is roughly as sensitive as a bag of bricks, saw that he had misspoken and hastily accepted Sam as Winchester's new partner. Things improved for a bit during the investigation. Winchester in a suit was a nice change of pace, at least after Sam redid the knot of the tie and pulled the shoulders until the jacket sat straight. And when Winchester confessed his terror of flying, Sam took a gamble and offered to do the job on his own. When Winchester refused and insisted on coming along, despite the fact that he was actually shaking, Sam felt something click satisfyingly into place. Winchester didn't acknowledge that Sam reached out for his hand when the airplane was gaining altitude, but he gripped back just as tight. Offhand, Sam couldn't remember anyone ever leaning into his touch before, at least not when they weren't in the middle of having sex. The demon perked up as soon as it saw Sam.
"Dean Winchester, you've picked up some interesting company," it cooed. "Somebody's slumming. Don't you want to know why?"
Winchester didn't flinch, just continued the exorcism, the words spilling out of him as fast and smooth as a lifetime Catholic praying the rosary.
"Demons lie," was all he'd say after, when they were holed up in their room and their minor scrapes and bruises had been treated. He sat at the little table in the kitchenette and didn't meet Sam's eyes.
"Was it a demon who killed your mom?" Sam asked, testing what he knew.
Winchester blew out a breath.
"Yeah, my dad says he had yellow eyes, not black like that one, which is the usual."
Sam nodded, accepting the confirmation that the killer had been father.
"But there are different kinds of demons, and the one that started the fire, he was powerful, stuck my mom on the ceiling somehow, made her watch when he killed my little brother." They hadn't talked about it since that first revelation. Sam had wanted Winchester to get used to him, but now that they'd actually exorcised a demon together, the topic was ripe.
"And you think that's what happened to my mom?"
"Yeah." Winchester flicked his eyes over to Sam, then back to the scarred vinyl tabletop.
"Did your dad ever catch the demon?" Sam asked, knowing he was on tremorous ground.
Winchester pulled out his gun and began to disassemble it. He'd shown Sam how to do it, but Sam couldn't get close to his speed and probably wouldn't however many years he practiced, which would have been annoying if not for the utter irrelevance of the task to Sam's future plans. The gun was in pieces before Winchester answered, still looking down.
"No, I think that's why. I think he found its trail again. I keep waiting to hear..."
Carefully, Sam approached close enough to squeeze Winchester's shoulder, and Winchester fell silent, his lips twitching in the echo of a grateful smile. Sam didn't need to meet Daddy Winchester to dislike him. Regardless of what temptation Father had put in his path to induce him to leave his remaining family, it was his fault for succumbing. Winchester always got this bruised, shamed look on his face when Sam raised the subject to his father. Sam didn't know what Papa Winchester had said on his way out, but it had been a shot to the heart. Served the old man right, what Sam was going to do to Winchester. If you didn't protect what was yours, you had to expect that someone was going to come along and find a better use for it. "There's a sign for the Starlight Motel, L-I-T-E," Sam said, pointing. Winchester didn't even look.
"No."
"How can you tell?" Sam wondered,
It's not like the sign says, incredibly tacky themes here. Last night had been unbelievably trout. Sam would have sworn that it was impossible to get trout-patterned linens. Winchester propped his arm against the window, tapping his fingers. Just one of my many useful talents. I think I like the marksmanship better, Sam said. But that night, wrapping himself in a towel with a once-colorful floral arrangement printed on it, he looked around the room, gingham squares mostly, with ribbon rosettes at the corners, and little corncob dolls dressed in blue bonnets as knick-knacks, and smiled. He hadn't meant to volunteer to draw Bloody Mary out. He still didn't even know why he'd done it, other than knowing that his secrets would be more than tasty enough to attract her. Now Winchester had the evidence, though. Sam had a secret involving a death. He could bring it up at any time. Winchester bled, too, at the end. Maybe they'd just agree on silence. Regardless, the satisfied look on Winchester's face when they'd saved the girl felt like a victory. Most of their poltergeist work didn't have such direct results. After, when they were back in their depressing little motel room, taxidermied birds, Sam imagined he could smell them. Winchester hovered like no one in his life ever had, checking his eyes at least 8 times, asking if he felt all right, bringing him fucking orange juice, of all things. "I'm okay," he said, when Winchester came back and knelt beside his bed for the 1,000th time, sheepish but insistent. "Dean," Sam said, and reached out to grab his wrist. "I'm fine." "Okay," Dean said, but he didn't pull away, and Sam didn't let go for a while. "Do you seriously think I'm going to need to draw a devil's trap in the pitch dark?" Sam asked. Protesting Dean's lessons rarely did any good, but this had to be over the top. Sam's knees were raw from kneeling too long on concrete. He could feel the back of his neck burning in the sun, and he needed a drink and a piss. "Might," Dean said. His voice was too high, not the usual calm confidence of these training sessions. Ever since the airplane demon, Dean had been pushing exorcist lore on Sam like there was going to be a pop quiz any day. Sam was familiar with the theory, but Father had strongly discouraged the practice, in the sense of whipping anyone caught reciting the Rituale Romanum. The scars on Lily's back had been a tangle of snakes, slick and white. He was a little nervous about what would happen if Father checked up on his recent studies, but he couldn't very well decline Dean's instruction on the topic. He was beginning to think that some of the runes, combined with the salt lines, could actually keep Father out, which itself might trigger some punishment from Father. But it was part of winning Dean's trust, so he hoped to get the leeway he needed. In the short term, his problem was actually learning the proper rituals. Sam tugged his blindfold down and wiped at his sweaty forehead. He was in the middle of the world's most lopsided pentacle, more of a square with a skin problem, really. Mystical symbols scattered as randomly around him as if he'd dropped a handful of change. The midday heat gave them the basketball court to themselves, so at least they weren't about to be arrested for Satanism, but he thought they might as well pick up the ball they'd brought as a decoy and start a little one-on-one. "I don't think this is working," he admitted. "Try again. If I get caught without any light with a demon hunting me..." "You want to get dead?" Dean yelled, shoving himself to his feet and stalking away. Sam waited for him to calm down. Several minutes passed. Dean kept pacing and glaring. "Dean," Sam said carefully, putting the chalk down, "give me some help here." Dean swiveled to face him, tearing at the buttons of his overshirt, then pulling it off in a tangle with his t-shirt. The scar stretched across his left shoulder, traveling over his collarbone, down into the pectoral muscle, nearly to the nipple. It was as jagged as a lightning strike, and it was old, stretched with time. That explained why Dean always kept a towel over that shoulder any time Sam insisted on barging into the bathroom. Sam had just assumed it was a weird shaving habit. "That's what you get when you fuck up one of these," Dean said, "if you're real lucky." Dean waited for some response, but Sam said nothing. "I was in charge of the devil's trap," Dean said, his face twisted with self-loathing. But I wasn't paying attention. I wasn't listening. It grabbed my dad, got him good. Then it started in on me. If it hadn't wanted to make him watch while it played with me, we'd both be dead. My dad nearly died saving my ass, and he couldn't walk for 2 months. Holy shit, Sam said. How old were you? Dean frowned. 11, I guess? That's why you gotta be able to do it right and do it fast, no matter what else is going on. Sam thought there were a number of things that a demon might have said to distract a kid who'd seen half his family burn to death. Dad looked at me different after that, Dean said, soft and confessional. Then he shook his head and continued, more firmly. I got busted back to supplies for a while. But you're natural at this shit. You aren't gonna pull anything like that. Yes, because I'm not 11. Didn't seem like a useful response under the circumstances. Sighing, Sam picked up the choke, shifted himself to a blank patch of asphalt, and tugged the blindfold down again. Sam's aim with the pistol improved, and he turned out to be what Dean called a freaking wizard with knives. When he threw a blade, it didn't even need any mental boost to stay on target. This was an advantage that none of his siblings had. He could already see how it would work. Get them into a psychic dead zone and then take it physical. Even Jake would have trouble with Sam now that Dean was playing drill sergeant on him. It wasn't what he'd planned, but it would still put him ahead of the game. He still needed to know what Father wanted with Dean. His best guess was that there was some vital mystical object that no psychic or demon could touch, so you'd need a superb hunter to go get it. But he couldn't find any mention of an object like that in the books he had. In the meantime, he'd largely stalled out on the fire records. The trail was so old that in lots of places around the country, the relevant documents weren't even computerized. In the absence of new information, though, there were always hunts, and they felt pretty good. After some spectacular early clusterfucks about the order of Abbott and Costello meet the Knight of the Living Dead, Sam felt bad about the new scar on Dean's shin, even if Dean should have given him more warning before jumping into the grave. They'd eased into a rhythm of salt and burns, sleeping through little towns like some kind of supernatural exhibition team. Every couple of weeks, they'd punctuate the ghost hunting with something that bled a little. Dean's knowledge of the minor supernatural beasts was comprehensive, and he wasn't shabby on demon exclusion and exorcism. He seemed to think Sam required training in that as well, so he did his best to dig up useful texts. Sam absorbed them, or skimmed them, depending on whether he was already familiar with the subject matter. There were plenty of details about non-demonic threats that Sam hadn't known, as well as fascinating connections between the rituals Sam had learned from the inside and the hints that hunters had winkled out over the centuries. Once Sam caught Dean on the phone, his shoulders hunched and his voice hesitant and respectful, asking somebody called Bobby to send a couple of books along. "They're not for me," he said. "Yeah, I guess." "No, sir. No, sir. But I..." "Yes, sir." When he ended the call, he gave Sam an apologetic look. Bobby's the best for demon lore, but he is kind of unfriendly with strangers. Maybe we'll head out there and introduce you when we get the chance. Sam nodded, and made a mental note to avoid that, unless he had no other option. From what he'd seen, hunters were more inventive and dangerous than he'd been raised to believe, and anyone Dean called the best might be more of a challenge than he wanted to undertake, unless he was sure of Dean's commitment. He scoured the internet, using all the clues Dean taught him to look for, and a few tricks of his own, finding them new hunts. The poltergeist jobs were his favorites. He was there to catch the shotgun shells Dean tossed over to him, to do half the digging, to yell at Dean to duck when the spirit materialized behind him, and to drop when he saw the warning in Dean's eyes. When he concentrated on the night's hunt and let the rest of his life blur out of focus, he felt like a superhero. Maybe he was always like this, working with a partner, but it made him bigger than himself, stronger. They moved in concert like a right hand and a left. Sam guessed that he was the sinister one. Dean corrected his posture of all things, which had to be a holdover from his martinet father. "You think you're fooling anyone that you're not 8 feet tall when you do that?" Dean asked him once. Sam just shrugged, because, as a matter of fact, people were a lot less intimidated when he played Gentle Giant. But he hated being poked in the back with a pencil, so he did have to show off his new combat skills the third time Dean did it while he was reading. He ended up with Dean pinned to the floor, his hands around Dean's neck. Dean blinked up at him, the creases around his eyes deeper than Sam expected. "Don't do that," he warned Dean. "You're not my father." Dean swallowed, his Adam's apple working against Sam's fingers, and nodded a little. "Yeah, sorry," he said, when he was standing again and Sam was halfway across the room. He needed Dean off balance, but still committed to him. "Hey, it's not a big deal. Just, you know, no more fucking pencils." He smiled, even if it felt a little stiff, and Dean tried to smile back. After a string of 5 clockwork-smooth de-ghostings in 10 days, they had a close call. As it turned out, the dear undeparted had a companion, a second ghost whose bones lay elsewhere in the cemetery. If she hadn't been interred in a crypt, they would have been roundly fucked, because they'd already dumped too much of their salt into the first grave to make a reliable circle around themselves with the remainder, and there would have been no way to dig her out of the ground before she got them. Sam managed to match her translucent, screaming face with a name and a picture from one of the newspaper reports he'd read, one of the girls the dead man had coached, and apparently diddled. Dean found the crypt and kicked in the door, and Sam broke open their last shotgun shells onto the corpse before setting it on fire. Dean was too busy being slammed into a stone sarcophagus to notice that Sam gave the fire just a bit of a psychic boost, allowing it to consume the girl ghost before she had time to break Dean's neck. Afterwards, they were both sore. Sam wasn't quite sure what had happened to his leg, but it involved both twisting and bruising, and Dean was walking with care that foretold cursing in the morning. Sam was absolutely high with it. His blood had been replaced with champagne. His grin wouldn't go away, no matter how much Dean scowled and talked about amateurs. The only time he'd ever come close to this feeling was when he'd dispatched Andy, and even that had faded quickly with the anxiety about whether the others would gang up on him in reaction, and whether Father would kill him for taking the initiative to start the competition a little early. Getting rid of the ghosts had no rebound. For some reason, the word kept coming to his mind was righteous. "Come on," he urged for the 50th time, as they pulled into the motel parking lot. "We'll just have a few beers." Dean's speculative expression wavered, irresolute. He pulled into a parking space and turned off the engine, but didn't move to open the door. "There'll be girls," Sam wheedled, fixing Dean with his best pleading look. Dean looked like he wanted to run away from this conversation, but also hungry. "I never know what to say to him," he admitted, which was a newsflash on the order of the fact that there was a war in Iraq. Sam wanted to say, "With your face, nice shoes wanna fuck ought to cover it," but that was the type of statement that tended to freak Dean out. Dean knew he was pretty, he just didn't know what to do with it, and hated to be reminded of both those things. "However, I really want to get laid. Don't you want to get laid?" Dean huffed. Sam could see him working himself up to another confession about his aversion to the dating game. "We could help each other out," he suggested. Dean tilted his head. Sam made an illustrative hand gesture. "You know, like buddies do." He was pretty sure he wasn't going to get punched. "Buddies?" Dean asked, his voice gravel rough. Sam nodded. Except that when they'd stumbled back into the room, both of them walking funny, Dean seemed to think that buddies kissed, too, with their eyes open. Sam finally pinned Dean to the bed and lowered his mouth to Dean's straining cock, but only because staring into Dean's ocean-green eyes was starting to weird him out. Father did this trick where he'd rummage inside your body without moving a muscle of his own, and if you were lucky, you'd just piss blood for a few days thereafter. This didn't feel anything like that. It felt deeper. Sam wasn't one to believe in walking on water or loaves and fishes, but Dean was enough to make him reconsider his general stance on miracles. Now that they'd crossed the line, Dean was panting for it constantly. He fucked like he'd suddenly realized he needed to make some lifetime quota, and he was 10 years behind. He followed suggestions like they were orders from on high, and he didn't seem to know that no was a possibility. He even got along when Sam had held up the handcuffs and asked, "You know what'd be hot?" The only time he'd balked was in the dark corner of her bar, and even then he'd given it up in the bathroom. Sam had always had ready access to a fuck, either from a sibling competitor or some unwitting normal who could be talked into a one-night or one-hour stand. Being able to get off at any time wasn't unusual, but Dean was... Easy was the obvious joke, and it was true, but there was more. He could mark Dean up without getting scratched and bitten in return, or he could put his hand on the back of Dean's neck and press Dean's mouth to his shoulder until Dean set his teeth there. He could rock their bodies together slow as melting tar, or shove Dean up against the door of the latest motel room and make him come while the car's engine was still ticking cool 10 feet away. When he'd first gotten the telekinesis under control, he'd felt a little like this, for a few days at least. King of infinite space, all his choices good ones. Just waking up was enough to give him a warm little shiver of satisfaction in the knowledge that the day to come would be his. Then on the fourth morning, Ava had nearly blown his head off, and Jake had followed that up with a trick that had left him half-drowned in a stinking toilet bowl, and after that Sam had been more careful about gloating. He wasn't gloating now, but he was thinking that maybe, whatever Father's plans were, he'd wait to go along with them until Dean's glow had faded some. Sam considered the hook man beneath their notice. There was nothing of interest in Iowa, and he had a dossier of, supposedly, dead children whose mothers had died and fired at the 6-month mark, to show Dean. He'd made some decent guesses about the origins of most of his siblings, though there was no record that matched his own vital statistics. His idea was that they'd go talk to the surviving fathers. Sam was pretty sure he could peel Dean off and confront at least some of them in private, see if they'd made any deals or other mistakes that might have made them targets. Dean, though, insisted that the jobs he'd found wouldn't wait. "Those kids will still be dead in a day or two," he said, shoving his clothes into his duffel. "These folks need us now." He did agree that if Sam found other kids who'd lived, then they'd follow that lead. Before Sam had a better idea of what he was looking for, there was little point in making his case. Whenever he tried to talk about what the fathers might know, Dean would just curl in on himself like a pill bug, brusque and skittish until Sam managed to coax him out of his sulk with blowjobs and, once to his mild embarrassment, a back rub, though that time did end with blowjobs. It was frustrating, even if Sam understood why Dean wasn't crazy about tracking down dozens of widowers. He thought about faking an investigation report to show that one of the kids had survived, maybe Andy, just to get one last little bit of use out of the twerp. But Dean was arguably a better investigator than Sam was. At least he was more familiar with the types of records confronting Sam, and the risk of triggering his suspicions was too high. Andy hadn't really been that much of a twerp. He was high-strung like the rest of them, but he'd never gone out of his way to be nasty to Sam, or really, to any of the others. Sam had picked him because, thinking back on it, his reasons were hard to reconstruct. Andy had been in the top third, powers-wise, and Sam had thought it was important to start out with a bang. Maybe it all went back to being 14, when Andy stopped hanging out with him and started following Claudia around. Sam had already known that it was important to reassess a person's value on a regular basis, but he hadn't much liked the experience of being downgraded. Now, it all seemed a little childish. He and Dean didn't waste any effort hunting anything that hadn't already started hurting people. The results were concrete. Power games didn't come into it. Father had always promised that one of them would make the world kneel. They'd grown up with the exploits of Alexander, Genghis Khan, Tamerlane, Cortez, Napoleon, and Hitler, each with his own lesson to teach about empire. And yes, it would be awfully nice if people cheered them into town and circled them with garlands of flowers on the way out. But even without that, most normals were not so much in need of a whipping as he'd been raised to think. He'd never bothered to notice before, because he'd always needed to remember that anyone friendly might be a test from Father. He hadn't been looking for people to help. He wasn't ruling out the idea of bringing the world to heel, but his priority was to get strong enough to defeat his siblings. Once that was taken care of, there would be plenty of time for other decisions. Dean pulled his head back and looked up at Sam. His mouth was wet and swollen, but he'd swallowed everything, not a smudge of white. "Jesus," Sam said, glad he could use the word without pain. "It's amazing nobody's locked you up in their basement and made you do that all day long." Dean flushed even darker and looked away. Sam grabbed his shoulders, urging him onto the bed, leaning back and pulling at him until he was stretched out over Sam, his cock pressing hard against Sam's belly. Sam kissed Dean, searching out every last taste. Dean was thrusting shallowly, lost in his own need. Sam broke the kiss long enough to grab the back of Dean's neck and tug at him until he could whisper in Dean's ear, "What if I picked out a girl? Would you lick her while I watched? Use that pretty mouth to get her off?" Dean's eyes fluttered beneath their lids. "Yes, Sammy," he breathed, as if he were imagining it right then, his head framed by soft thighs, Sam just sitting back and watching. Sam frowned. He put a careful hand between them and grabbed Dean's cock, pressing it at just the right place. Dean gasped, not all in pleasure. "Sam," he warned. Dean's kiss-like lips smacked together, then parted. Already, he knew better than to mouth off in the middle of sex. "Yeah, Sam," he said softer and deeper. But it wasn't enough. Sam let go, then wrapped his hands around Dean's shoulder, pushing him downwards. "Get me hard again," he said. "You're gonna come just from my cock inside you. You're gonna come so hard you'll give yourself a facial." In Oklahoma, Matt Pike was easy to play, because his resentments were so close to the surface. Maybe Sam was being a little harsh on the kid, since he hadn't exactly been a locked safe as a teenager either, but if you didn't learn to swallow your anger and fight back, you were never going to get anywhere. Anyway, Matt turned out to be the key to the case, bizarre bug fetish aside, so it was worth a little reminiscence about Father's desire to control everything Sam ever did or thought. Sam was impressed by the Oasis Plains curse. Insects were good, very atavistic. He'd have to remember the intimidating effect of an unbroken brown stream of creepy crawlies. "Is that why you don't talk about your dad? Because he doesn't want you looking into this stuff?" Dean said, barely a hint of a question in his voice, as they rolled out of town. "He doesn't believe in ghosts and visions," Sam said, letting his voice waver a little. "He tried to get me to go see a psychiatrist, take these drugs that made me... He thinks I'm weak." After a second, Dean put his hand on Sam's thigh, warm but not pressing down at all. "Hey," he said, "people don't want to believe this shit. That's just natural. It doesn't mean... It's 'cause he loves you." It was a great opportunity to work himself further into Dean's psyche, unmissable, really. But he felt like gravity had just tripled, the air sitting heavy on his chest, and it was a struggle to make his mouth open. "Yeah," he said at last, watching Dean's too-still face out of the corner of his eye. "He's just disappointed in me." Dean didn't say anything else until they were set for the night, and then he let Sam curl around him like a heavy winter coat. Sam went slowly, tugging every inch of skin, until Dean broke down and begged for it. Sam let him babble for a while, then fucked him even more slowly, drawing it out so that Dean went hoarse and then wordless. Afterwards, he was so limp and pliant that Sam just pulled him into place like a body pillow. Sam swallowed, trying to get rid of the weird weight in his chest, but it followed him down into sleep. Dean caught the Martian death flu in Lubbock, right after they took care of the were-coyote. Sam woke up the morning they were supposed to get back on the road to the sound of Dean dry heaving. In general, when they were growing up, Father would ward someone who was sick enough to be vomiting, but only in general. It paid to test. For the sick person, that meant that you occasionally had to defend yourself even while you had your hands wrapped around the porcelain sides of the toilet bowl to keep yourself from falling in. Being sick had been the matter of curling up, setting up any prepared defenses if you had them, and hoping to be left alone long enough to come staggering back to the group in a few days. It took him a couple of hours to realize that he could go in to see Dean. By that time, Dean was barely conscious, slumped and sweating against the cold pink and green tile of the bathroom. This motel's theme, as near as Sam could tell, was early Miami Vice. He'd planned on asking if Dean wanted anything, but Dean was well beyond answering. Sam left the bathroom door open as he searched the internet, then returned to wet a washcloth and put it on Dean's forehead. Dean winced, pale except for his freckles, and twisted like each drop of water weighed 1,000 pounds against his skin. "I'll be right back," Sam promised. The 7-Eleven 5 blocks away had saltines and Gatorade and Sprite. It didn't have any chicken soup, but he figured that Dean wouldn't be up to that today. Dean hadn't moved at all when he returned. His hair was heavy with sweat, beads of it thick and greasy at his hairline and over his upper lip, soaking his t-shirt and dampening the floor beneath him. Eventually, Sam managed to coax him back to the bed, with a trash can next to it as a mostly symbolic gesture, since Dean's system had been empty for hours. When Dean retched now, he brought his hand up to his stomach in an involuntary attempt to control the pain of the overstressed muscles. Sam gave Dean liquids in slow mouthfuls, and watched him hold on to them for 10 or 15 minutes before bringing them back up. He went back to the computer and checked. It was too soon for the hospital. Without health insurance, they'd just make Dean wait in the ER full of other sick people, and at least here he could lie down. At one point, he thought Dean asked for his father, but Dean was largely unresponsive, so there was no way to be sure. Taking care of Dean was tiring and gross. Even Dean didn't look good throwing up, and he smelled bad enough to turn Sam's stomach. Oddly, though, Dean's total vulnerability didn't disgust him as much as he would have thought. When he eased Dean back down after one last attempt with the Gatorade, Dean pressed his cheek against Sam's thigh, and he didn't get off the bed as he'd planned. Instead, he rubbed Dean's back and pressed a crown of kisses on Dean's hair. They stayed like that until long after Sam's own back had started to cramp. Dean was better on the second day, and pretended that he was ready for travel, but he didn't bother to hide his relief when Sam refused to share a car with him until he'd been vomit-free for 24 hours. That night, Sam climbed into bed behind him, curling up to press his chest to Dean's back. Dean stiffened. Sam frowned. Dean had showered late in the afternoon, and as far as he knew, the only problem left was weakness. Dean said. Is it okay if we don't... He reached behind himself, fumbling in the general direction of Sam's groin. Sam pulled away, realizing finally what Dean was trying to say. He'd slept in the other bed on the previous night, but that was solely to avoid the risk of getting spattered. Had he really not ever just... Well, maybe not. Dean was coughing still. He pulled his hand back to hug his arms around himself. Sam let his hand fall heavily on Dean's hip, squeezing carefully. I think I'll make it another day without exploding, he said wryly. Dean grunted noncommittally, but he allowed Sam to curl an arm around his waist, pulling him into the center of the bed. 2 weeks later, Sam woke up screaming from an actual, unprompted vision. Dean was there with an arm wrapped around his shoulder and a soft voice coaxing him back to reality. Sam knew it was stupid and weak to rely on someone else, but Dean was right there and he didn't have a competing agenda. Sam crawled into his chest and held on, soaking up his warmth until the worst of the aftershocks had faded. Sam pulled back and blinked, seeing the blotch of blood on Dean's t-shirt. I ruined your shirt, he said, sounding young and dazed even to his own ears. Why are you even talking? Dean asked. The worry in his voice made Sam's heart rattle in his chest. There had been something terrible done in the house in his vision, and he couldn't avoid the feeling that Dean was at risk. But Dean was here, solid, wrapped around him. I'm just saying, you should take it off. He tried. He tugged at the shirt, suddenly wanting Dean's skin more than anything. You're all... Dean protested, but he raised his arms, and Sam could already feel his cock stirring through his sweats. Don't worry, Sam said. I'll let you do all the work. In the morning, Sam took a look at the t-shirt before he threw it away. The blood was a carnation, a stiff tangle like a mess of tea leaves, dried red-brown. Divination had never been his strength, but when he looked at it, he had a strong impression of one word. Family. Which just went to show that divination was about as useful as a magic eight ball. The sketch he drew of his dream was no more helpful. Eventually, he admitted his strong sense that the tree and the house behind it were connected to them. But Dean just pointed out that if they were headed to a hunt there, then there was obviously a connection. They still didn't know where they were going, other than that it was a relatively large, single-family house. Dean didn't like it. When he proposed to do a ritual to bring on a vision that would give them more specific information, controlling by magic what his own mind couldn't rein in. How'd you even find out about that? He asked, and he wasn't suspicious, exactly. But Sam smiled as if he were embarrassed and thought fast. I knew you'd react like this, so I've been doing some research myself. There are lots of records of psychics. Dean winced. Look, not everything supernatural is evil.
Yeah, some of it's just dangerous.
Dean pushed the sketch away from himself and stood, moving away from the table where they'd been sitting. Sam worked on a glare of his own. He tried to go along with Dean whenever possible. That trust thing. Plus, it turned out that non-angry sex with Dean was better than angry sex with Dean, though honestly, even the angry sex set a benchmark for quality.
But his instincts told him that this vision was pointing him in the direction of Father's larger plans, so Dean was going to have to listen. I can do this, Dean. You're the one always telling me what a good hunter I am. This is something I can bring to the hunt. Dean rubbed his hand across his mouth. I knew you'd get a big head. And then they both rolled their eyes and snickered like 14-year-olds, which led to Dean whacking Sam on the shoulder, which led to a wrestling match that destroyed a chair. Wagon wheel back, better off dead. And a lamp. Red fridge on the chain, ditto. And ended with them sprawled on the less nasty bed. The one under the sombrero arrangement that served as a wall decoration. Sam blew a raspberry into Dean's armpit. Dean, who was still panting, shoved weakly at Sam, and he rolled off of Dean and stared up at the ceiling. So, the ritual, he said, imagining that the shadows in the stucco above him formed pictures of Father and his siblings, their faces wreathed in flames. Dean pulled at the cactus print sheet underneath them, wiping off his stomach. Don't like it, he said. Sam turned, propping himself up on one arm, even though that put his weight down right in the wet spot. Hey, he said, you'll be right there to protect me. The ritual gave him a migraine and made his ears bleed, which was a first. The car, the trunk, was the first coherent thing he managed to say. Dean continued to glare at him, a muscle jumping in his cheek. Sam reached up and touched it, Dean's stubble sharp against his fingers. Help me look, he said, softening it to an apology. Dean refused to talk, but he let Sam lean on him all the way out to the parking lot, then propped Sam against the rear door while he popped the trunk. Sam had a passing familiarity with the contents, but he wasn't looking for a weapon. He opened the false bottom, ignoring the dangling dreamcatcher, shoving aside the shotguns despite Dean's noise of distress, moving cases and boxes of ammo until he reached the bare metal of the bottom. The beige shoebox was jammed up against the far end of the trunk, squashed at the edges from years of misuse. The lid was spindled and broken, sliding off the box even before Sam had extracted it. Hey, Dean protested, his voice thin with anxiety, as papers and photos threatened to cascade across the trunk. Sam slowed down and brought the whole thing out, without losing any of the piles. Back in the room, Dean alternated between hovering over Sam's shoulder to look at each picture and scrap of paper, and getting as far away from the box as possible. He made about 20 trips to the ice machine and the candy machines. Each time, he'd return and sit on the edge of the bed with his legs jiggling, until he gave in and stalked back over to Sam. Time had faded all the ink on all the official records, and made the photos stick together. Worried about how Dean would react if he ruined one, Sam pulled them apart as slowly as he dared. Dean's mother had been a beautiful woman, blonde with a mischievous smile, and Dean's bastard father had been a darker version of Dean. Slightly sadder eyes, lips not quite as lush, but still enough to stop a heart at 20 paces. They seemed happy in the pictures, up until the very last one, where they were joined by a tow-headed young boy and a blobby little infant, too unformed to look like anyone. He put the pictures down, still at a loss to identify any connection to his vision, and rubbed at his forehead. He would have sworn... Wait. He picked up the final picture of the happy Winchester family, and, instead of looking at their faces, examined the background. Dean? He asked. Where was this photo taken? An hour later, they were on the road to Kansas.